am in for the Antonio Gibson absolute monster dance party this year, like breaking out, being a top five running back. I'm here for that.
What does a monster dance party look like?
There are strobe lights, there are neon shirts, there are glow sticks. Whether you want to sit here and tie those to a string, swing them around, it's all depends. Just depends on how much space you need and when you're dancing. But it's small snippets. That gives you an idea in your mind's eye of what this dance party looks like, my friend.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, you ready to discuss? I think it's going to be the firework division, the NFC East today, baby.
You think this is going to be the firework division? What for fantasy or?
Yeah,
for...
man.
Okay,
look,
I thought you meant for
offenses
like.
Here.
Yeah, I thought you meant for like real life, and I was like,
no,
maybe? You know, possibly. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. Enjoying these division previews, and dude, I started watching New Girl the other day.
That's one of the best decisions you have ever made in your life, my friend.
Just such a fun, enjoyable show. I mean, the characters are great. I just enjoy myself watching it. So, yeah, I tweeted about it, and everybody was like in the replies saying like you made an incredible decision, and I was like, all right, there has not been one bad review of this show, and so far, so I'm like 20, I think I'm 21 episodes in.
Dude,
it's very
Schmidt
fun.
Schmidt is the 101. Like him,
the stuff
and
that
Dwight...
man says, it's so good. He was the one episode. He's like, "Have you guys seen my
driving moccasins?"
Yeah, that one. That was the one he said. And then he also says, "Have you guys seen my croquet cleats?" That one had me rolling. That one absolutely had me rolling.
I love it. I love that show so much, man. There's so many good characters, dude, between Schmidt and Winston. I love that show. My wife and I have watched it a ton. Like, we've gone back and watched old episodes and stuff. It's one of those shows, like, it never really kind of gets old. It
ages. Yeah, I was
going to
say, it seems very rewatchable.
Dude, it's so good. Because there's just so many different ones where there's like standout moments where you're like, oh my lord. Like, Schmidt is, he's probably tied, man. I think he's probably my 101 for like sitcom characters ever. If it's not him, it's Dwight. Like, I love Dwight, but I think Schmidt takes the cake, man. I mean, I don't know where you sit with that. Is he your favorite out of the show so far?
So far, it's close. I do like Nick. A lot.
Oh, that's my wife's 101. She loves Nick, man.
Yeah, because I already like the actor in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean it's tough to pass on Schmidt with the stuff that he says. But I don't know if I'm ready to put him in the tier of Dwight or Michael Ooh. Scott. Like, that's like upper echelon. But again, I'm also only 20 episodes in, and there's what, how many seasons? So
there's a ton, dude. There's just. My whole thing, and it comes down to this, when it comes down to like my favorite characters, whether it's movies, TV shows, all these different things, it's quotables, man. Like those one-liners and quotables that stick with you. Like, it's like, if this was on a t-shirt, buy it, send it. I'm giving you my money now.
That's why Michael Scott is regarded very, very often as the GOAT. So,
oh, dude, so many good quotables. I mean, the gifts just keep on giving, my friend. They never go away, dude. So let's out of TV shows and into some interesting situations and things we're going to talk about here with the NFC East, man. Let's kick this off with Philly. What do you think Jalen Hurts' absolute ceiling is for fantasy this year?
So I tweeted this over the weekend. Like, I tweeted that Jalen Hurts is the most hyped, underhyped quarterback in fantasy, because every day I see people talking about, we're not talking about Jalen Hurts enough. We're not talking about Jalen Hurts enough. But then all at the same time, all I see is people talking about how Jalen Hurts could be a top three quarterback this year. So I've seen spots where some are saying he could be the quarterback one. I don't see that, because I don't think the offense is going to be good enough. That's for starters. B, like, yes, we know his rushing is going to be massive, but he's not, you know, he's a very, very good rushing quarterback, but he's not Lamar. He's not Kyler. And C, again, I just think to be the quarterback one in fantasy, you have to have like a top five offense, most likely. Like Josh Allen last year, the Bills were an elite offense. He was the quarterback one. We know what Mahomes did. We know what Lamar Jackson did in his MVP season. Like, I just don't know if the Eagles offense is going to be that level, but he definitely has, you know, top 5 to 7 upside. We saw it in the limited sample last year. He's going to get better as a passer with actual receivers to throw to, and the offensive line is going to get Brandon Brooks back. They're going to have Kelsey in the middle still. Like, they're going to be, I think the days of the Eagles being, remember a couple years ago where it was the Eagles and Dallas, like they were the clear top offensive lines in football. I think those days are gone, but I think the Eagles can still be like a top 10 unit. And with that rushing floor, it's just, it's hard not to like him. Now, if his ADP continues to climb, I could see myself not being, you know, not drafting him as much as other quarterbacks. But right now, I mean, I think I have as my QB 8, and that's probably, I feel like that's lower than a lot of other people. So
I think his ceiling is top 3. And now how many touchdowns he's able to garner on the ground, through the air, what we kind of think about that. Like, I think that's going to determine his abilities as a passer, kind of like with Lamar. That is going to determine what his absolute ceiling is. Like, if he's able to surpass, and a lot of the people's expectations for him as a passer is really low. And I've been out in the streets, I've been fighting it, I've been talking about, like, everybody's like, well, the Eagles expect Jalen Hurts to turn into a passer, and he's never shown that he's a good passer. And I was like, come on, dude. Like, I talked about it on Twitter over the weekend.
Games.
Even in college, though, that's my whole thing. It's like, people talk about the sample size with him as a starter in Philly, and I was like, oh, okay. So you're talking about a broken offense. You're talking about his ADOT was extremely high. All they asked him to do was run circles in the backfield and then throw deep. And he had no receivers he was throwing to. And now, the offensive scheme in Philly, they're going to scheme up more easier throws for him. You go back to college, dude, I'm going to be writing this up for FTN Fantasy later this week, so people need to check that article out. I'm going to dive into it, dude. I'm going to go deep. I'm going to talk about Jalen Hurts. I'm going to talk about all the different parts and pieces about him as a passer and what his range of outcomes in. But I'm in on it, man. Like, I love him this year. I think his rushing is going to give him an immensely high floor. Like, the only way that you're not projecting Jalen Hurts to finish as a top 10 fantasy quarterback is if he doesn't start all the games. He starts all the games, that's happening. Now, what he does as a passer is going to unlock his ceiling. I'm here for it. I think that he could crush this year, so give me the hype, give me the ADP. I'm in on it, man. But over from Hurts, dude, what we're expecting is probably going to be his main pass catcher this year, the wide receiver one in this offense. At least that's kind of where I stand, although I do think it could be somewhat of a committee. What are your expectations for Devonta Smith right now, like entering his first year in the league?
So I tweeted that when he got drafted, but I think there's a very clear path to Devonta Smith leading all rookie receivers and targets. He'll probably rival Jamar Chase in that regard, but I think he's going to fit well. Like, I think it's going to be either him or Goddard leading this team in targets, and I think the talent-wise, I know there's some people with concerns about Devonta Smith as a prospect because of his size and everything like that, but I don't care because he's already been drafted with a high pick. The Eagles traded up to get him. Like, that has no impact for me in fantasy this year, really at all, any year, because if he's on the field, he's going to have an opportunity to produce. He's my number two ranked rookie receiver behind Jamar Chase, and I wouldn't be surprised if he finished ahead of him. It just depends on, like, if Devonta Smith is as good as he was in college or close to it, Jalen Hurts is going to be pretty damn good too, because that's going to be, you know, an immense talent at the wide receiver position. So I have him just inside my top 40 at receiver right now, but a lot of those receivers in that range, they could easily fluctuate. So I've been getting him a lot in best ball right now. I like getting him where he's going in best ball. I'm in on Devonta Smith. I'm not, like, projecting him to have a Justin Jefferson-type rookie season or anything like that, But with his ability to win in contested catches, his ability to win deep down the field, he's a clear top receiver on this team. And I think drafting him right away, he's a flex with an upside to be in the three receivers, a guy you start, three receiver leagues, a guy you start every week. And I think he has wide receiver two upside in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you just stated here, man. Like, I love Devonta Smith. I think, and I'm with you, I think that he could rival Chase. It's going to come down to red zone and touchdown equity in their offenses. I think that's going to be the needle that it's probably going to move to depend on who's going to be the best rookie wide receiver this year for fantasy, assuming that everybody stays healthy and all that kind of jazz. But, like, I think that he could be the clear-cut alpha from day one, man. Like, who is fighting him for targets? Like, I know Dallas Goedert's going to be a focal point in the offense, but he's not a number one. Like, he's just not that level of talent. Like, he's really good, but Dallas Goedert is not Travis Kelce-esque talent to where he can lead a passing attack. Can he be extremely good for us in fantasy? Sure. Same thing, I mean, everybody's like, we're hearing all these rumors about, oh, Jalen Reagor's going to be in the slot. And I was like, what else were y'all expecting for Jalen Reagor this year? Like, what were you forecasting if this is earth-shattering to you? Like, Devonta Smith and Travis Fulgham are going to play the outside. We should have known that already. You and I have been talking about that all offseason. So, that doesn't, like, this news about Jalen Reagor doesn't move the needle for me at all. I like Devonta Smith, man. I think that where you're valuing him right now, currently in drafts, is appropriate. I will say in best ball, it's really difficult to get him and Hurts on the same team a lot of different times based off of their ADPs. Like, Hurts is falling somewhere in that 80 range. Devonta's going, I've seen him anywhere in the 80s to like 90s overall. If you're able to stack him and you're able to go that route, then that's great. I love it. If not, then just grab Reagor late. I think it's a good way to sit here and get part of this offense. You don't need to double stack Hurts because most of his equity, or at least a large portion of it's going to come via his legs. So while I like Devonta Smith, I'm not going to reach for him if he falls to me. In drafts, definitely like him. And yes, I'm with you. I think that he could be the number one wide receiver as far as rookies go this year. Out of the passing attack and onto the ground game, man. Miles Sanders. Are you buying him as a top 20 running back for this season? Because you and I have discussed this previously. He's in a weird tier of, like, there's a lot of different guys right there in that middle RB2 range. Like, him and J.K. Dobbins are basically the Spider-Man gif. Like, they're staring at each other, looking at a lot of the same opportunities, looking at a lot of the same strengths and skill sets, and also a lot of the same pitfalls, possibly. Like, they're not going to get a lot of targets, and they're going to have rushing equity that's also going to be divided between their quarterback that's in the backfield as well. Do you think Sanders is breaking out, or is he going to bust this year?
There's always those players in fantasy that we are terrified to be, that we're like, we're really afraid that we're going to be wrong about. And I think Miles Sanders is that player for me this year, because he's easily a top 20 running back. The position is just not deep enough, and Sanders has talent. And right now he has, you know, he averaged, when he was healthy last year, over 18 touches per game. And he actually averaged over 4 receptions per game with Jalen Hurts. So I don't know if he's going to be like a zero in terms of pass catching, but that was also in a year where he fell off as a pass catcher. I mean, he was as a rookie, he was second among all running backs in yards per route run, or yards per target. And then in 2019, he averaged about 1.6 yards per route run. That was 25th among running backs, but it's really, if you put it in qualified running backs, it was closer to top 15. Last year, that number went down to 0.6. Like, he was not used. That was the allure of Miles Sanders coming out of Penn State, was he was a receiving running back that you didn't just use off on screens and dump offs. He ran legitimate routes down the field. That stopped last year, and then of course he had a ton of drops. He was not efficient. And then they bring in Kenneth Gainwell, who is, in my opinion, I was surprised to see him go that late, but in my opinion, he was also the best, most pure pass catching running back in this class. You have Nick Sirianni there, who has relied on the run in the past, but he also has relied on multiple running backs in the past. They still have Jordan Howard. And then for whatever it's worth, they bring in Kerryon Johnson, who I don't think he's going to take touches away from Miles Sanders, but what if he takes snaps away, because Kerryon Johnson's an above-average pass blocker. So I have questions with Miles Sanders, but there's also a ton of upside. I mean, we talk about the impact that mobile quarterbacks have for running games. I mean, we see, you look at the leaders in yards before contact per attempt every year, and a lot of them are in offenses with, you know, mobile quarterbacks, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins with Baltimore. You look at just last year alone, you have Devin Singletary was up there in yards before contact. A lot of these players, like, it's Damian Harris was fifth playing alongside Cam Newton. Like, there's a lot of appeal with that. Plus, the offensive line is going to be a lot better. I just worry that there's going to be games where if he's not being used in the passing game, and if that's what they have concerns about after he took a step back last year, his ceiling is going to be capped. So right now, like, I have him in that running back 18 range. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he was like an RB12, you know, the RB12 at the end of the season. I don't know if he's going to have the upside to be what a lot of people draft him to be last year, where he was like a borderline first round pick. I don't know if he's got that potential, but the talent's there. Like, he ripped off a ton of long runs, which you can say, okay, that was the only thing that kept him afloat in fantasy, but like, that just shows the type of player he is. So Miles Sanders, I currently have as more of a bust than a pure true breakout, but I could easily be wrong.
I think so. It sounds like I'm going to be hedging here. I don't think that he's going to be either. I think he's going to be fine where he's being drafted at. Like, I think that he's going to be a top 20 running back for us this year.
Yeah.
The thing that I believe about Sanders is I believe he's a higher floor option than people are giving him credit for, but I don't see the ceiling. Like, I don't see league-winning type ceiling from him because, like, if you stick him in the same kind of realm as, like, okay, J.K. Dobbins, Nick Chubb, a lot of different runners that aren't going to get a ton of targets, because Miles Sanders is not going to get a ton of targets. It's just not happening. I don't think with the offensive design, with Jalen Hurts, if he's mobile and he's running,
if he holds on to this role, I think he'll get more targets than people think. But, yeah, he's not going to get, you know, he's not going to catch, you know, 60 passes.
Enough passes to, like, be, like, top five is my whole thing. Like, I think he could catch
45 passes.
It's possible. It's possible. I think that's probably like the high range of his outcomes.
Yeah, because he, like I said, he was averaging over four catches, or it was either four catches or four targets per game when Jalen Hurts was under center. But the caveat is, you know, they had nobody to throw to. Now you have Devonta Smith.
Exactly.
You know, full season, hopefully, with Jalen Reagor. So it's like that could be a huge part of it, obviously, as well.
Yeah, I think that the upgrade of talented receivers around him, like Reagor actually being deployed in a better role, short area targets, allowing him to create after the catch, not zombie targets going to Zach Ertz. Hopefully he's moving on. You know, I think the offense can be more efficient this year. But again, I think people look at Miles Sanders as a boom bust option, and I really look at him as a high floor option. That's where I think I differ versus a lot of the consensus. Is that I think that he is going to have enough ceiling weeks and enough equity in this offense to where he's going to be really good. But I don't see, like, if you're looking for an RB2 on your team that in his best range of outcomes could finish as a top five running back this year, I don't look at Miles Sanders in that light. I don't. I really, really don't.
Yeah, and I tend to agree. Like, if I had to, like, I think Clyde has a better chance of being top five in that range. I think Swift does just because he could catch 80 passes. We talked about the concerns we have with the offense and everything, but still, he has that potential. Najee Harris, I think, has a better chance just because we don't have any questions with his volume. And I agree. Like, we've talked about it a ton. Sanders and Dobbins are very, very similar. I think Dobbins has more competition for carries, which plays in Sanders' favor, but the running scheme in Baltimore is just, you can guarantee that J.K. Dobbins is going to be efficient this year. He was efficient last year. Gus Edwards, who I love but is not J.K. Dobbins as a player, has been legitimately one of the most efficient running backs in the NFL since entering the league because of that running scheme. So it's like Dobbins could still score a bunch of touchdowns and average 5.5 yards per carry and still make up for that if he's getting less carries than Miles Sanders. But I do agree, like Sanders, if he holds on to that starting job and Kerryon Johnson and Jordan Howard and Kenneth Gainwell don't take touches away from him, he should be a top 15 running back at worst.
Yeah, I think top 20 is floor for me. I think that depending on what he does this year, how healthy the offensive line is, how his touchdown equity versus Hurts and the rest of those running backs, I think is going to determine his ceiling. But I think he's going to get enough work, provided health, that he's a top 20 guy, man. So moving away from Philly and over to Dallas, man. I mean, just simply put, man, what is there not to like about this offense? Like, honestly, like, if there's a part or piece of this offense that people don't like, what is it? Because I honestly don't see it, man. Like, you want to go for Dak? Sure, let's go. You want to draft Zeke in the first round? All right, let's ride. You want to go for Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb as top 24 wide receivers? Okay, let's go, baby. Push that ticket. You want to sit and take Blake Jarwin at the end of drafts? Okay, Michael Gallup in a 10th round, 11th round wide receiver that's going to see 100-plus targets and be the deep threat in this offense. Adam, what is there not to like about this offense, especially all of these players' ADPs? Because I don't see it.
Yeah, like if there's one player that I actually don't like, it is Michael Gallup, but his ADP is perfectly fine, so I'm not really against it. I will say, though, like Michael Gallup finished as the wide receiver 38 last year, but he was also second among all receivers in routes run, so he had all the opportunity. He actually averaged more targets per game after Dak Prescott got hurt. So I just think he's at best like the fourth option in this offense. But again, it's going to be a high volume, high scoring offense. And you talked about pace. I mean, this team played incredibly fast last year. They were, I think, second in seconds per snap. They were top seven or eight in percentage of no huddle. So they're going to play fast again. Their offensive line is going to be better. We've already seen Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins back at OTAs, so that's obviously massive for this team. But for me, it starts with Zeke. I'm taking Zeke like as a top four pick, and his ADP in a lot of spots is like eighth overall, ninth overall, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. He was the RB2 in fantasy before Dak got hurt, behind only Alvin Kamara. He was catching a ton of passes. I'm not worried about. I know everybody, and I tweeted about it like a week ago. I literally tweeted, like, what is there not to like about Ezekiel Elliott this year? And every answer was Tony Pollard. And I'm like,
gosh,
Tony Pollard is not taking Zeke's job. He didn't take it last year when Zeke was bad and fumbling. Why is he going to take it this year? Zeke's getting 20 touches a game, probably more. I would say 20 carries a game almost. And he's getting, like Zeke could be the RB1 this year. He's going to score touchdowns. I talked about the concern I have with his fumbling. That isn't a concern. I think he was just trying to score and do too much on every play after Dak got hurt. It's an elite offense. It's a fast-paced offense. Tony Pollard is going to get, sure, 6 to 8 touches a game. That's it. He's not taking Zeke Elliott's job. I have Zeke as my RB4 right now behind only McCaffrey. And this is in full PPR. So McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and Kamara. Then I have Zeke. But there's been spots where I've actually taken, like in half PPR leagues, I've taken Zeke over Alvin Kamara. And I don't think it's insane to take him over Kamara in full PPR, because does he have the pass catching upside of Kamara? Probably not, but I mean, he's going to catch 50 plus passes. He's going to have 270 carries. Like I hope people don't wisen up, and I hope they let Zeke continue to fall, because look, if I can get him at the 7th overall pick, that is ridiculous. He's a top five overall player for me, and it's not even a discussion. Like, I'm over Taylor, I'm over Barkley. I don't care. I just, what have we seen from Zeke in the last couple years to not have him in this range? This is the first year he was quote unquote bad, and yes, he was. The only thing you can say about Zeke is the long explosive running plays are gone. I don't care.
I don't either, man, because they're going to make up for it in play volume with their pace and stuff. And if you look at it, like, for all the Tony Pollard truthers of the world, and you know what? I'm going to go back. The only thing wrong with this offense is the fact that Tony Pollard is going to be drafted and overdrafted this year, because people are going to sit here and buy into the fact of, like, okay, he could take the job away from Zeke. What in the hell happened last year that makes you think that he could take the job away from Zeke? Zeke was top five amongst all running backs in routes run and pass blocking snaps. He's not coming off the damn field. He's not. He owns the role as a three down workhorse in an offense that's going to be top three in pace and top three in scoring. And he catches passes. If you don't like Zeke, all you're trying to do is confirm priors about your Tony Pollard love. That is it. That is all you're doing. Because Ezekiel Elliott is still a value in drafts right now. Like, we're out of the stage of the offseason where, and there was a time, Adam, it was a glorious time. My mouth is watering still thinking about this time in the offseason, where Ezekiel Elliott was falling into the second round of drafts in best balls. And it was beautiful, because you could stack like another running back and be laughing for days. That's not happening at this point in the offseason, and I think people are going to wise up a little bit, but I still see Ezekiel Elliott sitting around at the 110, the 111. Like, that's happening. And at that spot, that's a money pick, baby.
Dude,
like,
I've been doing best ball drafts all weekend, right? Whew. And I've had a lot of, like, 8th overall, 9th overall spots. I can't tell you how quickly I select Ezekiel Elliott when I'm on the clock and he's there. Like, I don't even scroll through the rest of the players on the board. I just click on his name and hit draft, and I move on. And I like I've been drafting him. Like I said, I would draft him 4th overall, 3rd overall. Like, I don't care. I don't care. He's still young. Yes, his numbers have declined a little bit, but why are we so quick to talk about the bad situations for Miles Sanders last year and other running backs, but Zeke last year was, oh, he's on the decline, he's bad.
He was dealing with injuries quarterback. Too.
Didn't have his starting quarterback, who was on pace to absolutely shatter offensive records. Didn't have his offensive line healthy at all. Like, are we just completely throwing that out?
Most people are, dude, and a lot of it's like there's a beautiful shiny set of blinders for everybody that just loves Tony Pollard, like stands Tony Pollard, that like all of context goes up.
He's a good player. He's a good player,
and I'm not hating on him. He's a good player. But to sit here and throw out all of the context about what happened with Zeke last year is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then you're talking about a guy that, like, the other thing about this, Adam, is that Zeke dealt with a hamstring strain, a calf contusion. He wasn't sitting here, like, he wasn't fully healthy, and even if he was, the rest of the context of that offense around him was terrible. Like, Andy Dalton was god-awful. He showed that he is cooked as an NFL quarterback. Like, I understand the offensive line had a lot of problems and a lot of injuries and stuff like that, but besides that, that offense had issues, man. And we're just not going to discuss that when we talk about Ezekiel Elliott. Like, I don't understand it. I really, really don't.
Yeah. He's, like, it's crazy that, like, I think Saquon Barkley's a better, more explosive player than Zeke. But, like, I have him comfortably ahead of him for fantasy. And I think a lot of people think that's crazy. But, like, are we forgetting how good Zeke's been his entire career?
Yep.
I think a lot of it also is because, like, a lot of people still just think Dallas is stupid for taking him in the draft where they did. And sure, they probably should have taken Jalen Ramsey or whatever. But, like, Zeke has been more than incredible. He's been phenomenal. So, like, let's just get past that. Understand that he's an elite fantasy running back who's still young, is in one of the three best offenses and one of the fastest pace offenses, and is going to get 20 plus carries a game.
There's so many other things around it. It's like whether people want to hate on Zeke for a laundry list of things. They talk about his fumbling last year. They talk about his drop-off and efficiency. I think there's also two big factors, and I've discussed all the Tony Pollard love, but also people, and especially you see this more in dynasty circles and social media, just because Zeke got paid, everybody's like, oh, they paid a running back. Just a bad decision. Like, that doesn't matter about fantasy, man. Like, it doesn't. Get this out of your head. It's going to be a damn good offense. Ezekiel Elliott, as long as he's healthy, is going to win people championships.
Yeah. While you were talking, just moved him to my RB3. So, the only running backs I take over him are McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook. It's official.
And that's fine, dude. And people, and I don't think it's insane to put him over Barkley right now. We're getting reports about, like, is Barkley going to be limited coming out the gate? Zeke, that's not going to be the case. So draft Zeke, get your exposure.
Do you want to gush about your QB1?
Oh,
because
baby.
I'm as close to on board as you can be. He's my quarterback too. So, and we're talking, dude, of course, about I don't even know who their backup is now. Actually, I was going to make a joke. They still have who was the guy? Ben DiNucci. That's who it was.
I love Dak this year, dude. I really do. And I'm not going to fault anybody. If you're going to go with Dak or you're going to go Kyler as your QB1, that's fine. We're good. And I understand. I get it. That I'm not putting Josh Allen at one. I'm not putting Patrick Mahomes at one. They're not there right now. As the offseason goes through and we get closer to week one, maybe this changes. But right now, yes, I love Dak Prescott right now. Love him. And for all the reasons we're talking about, the pass catchers around him are all fantastic. Offensive line is going to be good. And people are like, okay, well, what about the rushing equity? And I'm like, okay, what about the rushing equity? Like, I'm not expecting, and Dak, what he's shown us as a passer in the limited sample that we saw last year, I mean, they're going to run so many freaking plays in Dallas, Adam, that whatever he gives you rushing-wise, 250, 300 rushing yards, like a handful of scores. And that's another thing, before I get into more Dak Prescott love. People don't correlate what narratives they're going to cherry-pick. So here's my thing. People want to fade Dak when they're talking about, okay, well, if his rushing equity is decreased. Then going back to Ezekiel Elliott, then why the hell don't you think that Ezekiel Elliott is going to score more rushing touchdowns? I have heard the narrative out there about, well, what about Prescott's legs and the rushing? But people don't correlate that with, okay, then you should love Ezekiel Elliott more than you do. That never gets discussed. But back to Prescott, man. Love him. The play volume is going to be fantastic. So is the passing rate. All of the weapons, they stay healthy. Guy can smash this year. But have you, and I know it gets tossed out there and everybody's like, well, I haven't heard anybody talk about it. Have you heard anybody discuss, okay, drawbacks on Prescott's legs and then also discuss why they should like or they do like Ezekiel Elliott more this year because of that fact? Because I have not heard it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I just think, like, for we talked about Dak is we have not been high on Dak for rushing yards in the first place. It's the fact that he gets a lot of rushing touchdowns. Like, there was a stretch where he had like six every year, and like Dak doesn't like Dak can still run a 2 yard touchdown in despite coming off injury. Like,
yep.
And okay, yeah. What if they say, okay, Dak, we don't want you to run because the play he got hurt on, he was running, right? What if they say that? Okay, then Zeke scoring, then Zeke has an even better chance of leading the league in touchdowns. So, like, yeah, like I have Dak as my QB too. I have him ahead of Josh Allen, so that's just letting you know where I'm at. I just think it's the offense is so good. Dak's been great. The pass catchers are elite, and tying that in, I think CeeDee Lamb's due for an absolute monster sophomore season because. For the love of God, please let this guy play more snaps in the second half of games because I don't know how many times I saw Noah Brown on the field instead of CeeDee Lamb. I don't know if it was injury related or what, but his ceiling is massive and he is going very high in drafts, but like I think it's well warranted. He is an immense talent, and like would you be surprised if he was the wide receiver one on this team at the end of the year?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's the wide receiver one on this team. I wouldn't be surprised if this team supports two wide receiver ones this year. And I know people think that that's insane. But I really think like that, and I have my over at FTM Fantasy, I have my offenses to target article that is live on the site. Go check that out, and you will understand why I love this Dallas offense so much. I think that people, last year, everybody loved the Cowboys offense. We were all talking about it. We were all buying into it. We all just were enamored with it. And you see everything go totally sideways from health, from standpoint of like the offensive line, all different things. And it's like, what has changed in that situation that we shouldn't be as high as we were on it last year going into this season? Like, what has changed on that? Except people's like exhaustion of the narrative or the exhaustion of like talking about a certain team. It's like all of those things can still be true for this season. And if people are not willing to buy back into that, I just feel like you're doing it wrong. Like all of these things still exist in the small snippet we saw of this offense. Dak was supporting two top 24 wide receivers before he went out. Dak was the QB1 overall in fantasy.
Zeke was the RB2.
Amari Cooper was a top 5 wide receiver in that stretch, dude.
Like, yeah, so they had what? They had the QB1, the RB2, and two top, what, 20 receivers?
Yep. And Michael Gallup was still lagging. I think he was wide receiver 40 or 42 in that stretch. But that, again, like with his volatility, he could be a top 36 wide receiver. That can happen, man.
Yeah.
So Dallas is, I don't get
Dallas
it.
Is elite. They're going to be fantastic. I'm just going to keep drafting Zeke.
I'm just going to keep drafting a lot of Dallas, man, until the ADP is correct and I'm not able to get them. I'm just going to keep doing it, man. Just going to keep on pressing that button, man. So moving over from Dallas over to another team that we can project. I mean, considering even with the substandard quarterback play last year, this offense is going to run fast, going to run a lot of play action. I think the OC there isn't a smart offensive mind. The Washington Footballs, man, think they're going to be a good offense this year. If all of those things are true on what I'm saying, how should we be valuing Ryan Fitzpatrick and his impact on this offense, Adam?
Yeah, it's just giving your skill players opportunities. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick has done his entire career. He's targeted his number one receiver at a very healthy rate, whether it's been the Jets days with Brandon Marshall, the Buffalo days with Stevie Johnson, Devontae Parker last year. Like, he has given his number one receivers opportunities. He's been top five in terms of aggressive throws, according to the Next Gen stats, like percentage of his throws in the tight windows each of the last two seasons. So, yeah, I mean, we were pretty hyped when the signing happened for Terry McLaurin, who was not healthy at all last year, playing through multiple, ankle sprains. But you saw the floor and the ceiling combo with Terry McLaurin. Like, I tweeted it, but he was, like, over 75 yards in, like, 12 of his games. The touchdowns were mediocre, but again, like, he can win at every level. He's going to be 100% hopefully this year. And whatever you think of Ryan Fitzpatrick, it is a clear quarterback upgrade, especially because Alex Smith, we know, was limited and was throwing to, J.D. McKissic eight times a game. Fitzpatrick is going to take shots with Terry McLaurin, who I think has legitimate top 10 upside this year. Curtis Samuel, we know the fit for the offense, at least for the offensive coordinator. The question is, are they going to use him how they used him in Carolina, or are they going to use him more kind of all over the field? Last year in Carolina, he was kind of a deep threat. But we know he's a guy that you can give short passes to. You can play and give him the ball on jet sweeps and stuff like that. So I think that's an area where he can make plays. And then you have your guy, Antonio Gibson, who I feel like nobody in the fantasy industry really doesn't like. There's definitely a lot to like about Antonio Gibson, for sure.
I love Antonio Gibson. I love all parts and pieces of this offense, dude. And one of the parts that you're talking about with Terry McLaurin, man, I know a lot of people are like, okay, well, there's more skill players. There's more players on this offense. I don't think that people really understand how much the injuries and stuff impacted Terry McLaurin, man. Like, before he popped up with the ankle issue, you're looking at a guy that was top 20 in yards per route run weeks 1 through 11, okay? He was the wide receiver 10, Adam, in fantasy points per game. Now, after the injury, he bottomed out. He was 106th in yards per route run, tied with Breshad Perriman and freaking Mac Hollins. He was the wide receiver 51 in weeks 12 through 17. He was not even close to healthy, Adam. Not even close. So, yes, I'm buying back in on Terry McLaurin. I like this offense. I think that Scott Turner is a smart offensive mind. I think they're going to run fast. They're going to do a lot of things that are smart for an offense to do. A lot of motion, a lot of play action. I'm in on Fitzpatrick, dude. I think he's a great late-round flyer. Mm-hmm. If you're going to punt the quarterback position, you're going to take a guy that is going to be in a good offensive system, good skill players around him. I'm willing to sit here and push the button on Fitzpatrick late and redraft. If you want a punt quarterback and you're going to stream, get him and get another guy and just enjoy.
Yeah, he's a streamer, but we know there's upside with Fitzpatrick in fantasy. Last year, he was 15th in fantasy points per dropback. He finished as a top 10 quarterback five different weeks last year. And you mentioned Washington, quietly a very fast-paced offense. They were fifth in the league in average seconds per snap. And now you have a receiving corps of Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Dyami Brown, Logan Thomas, and of course you have Antonio Gibson out of the backfield. The offensive line, I think, is going to be you know, slightly above average. Like, it's a good situation for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And real quick on Terry McLaurin, the guy played through multiple ankle sprains, still had over 1,000 yards, and he still had 70 yards or a touchdown in 11 of 15 games. He is an incredible player, and he's an incredible combination of ceiling and floor. So you give this guy 140 targets, he's going to make the most of them.
He's going to smash, dude. We just need the touchdowns, dude. And before we move on to the Giants here, Antonio Gibson, over at FTN Fantasy, I've got my buy or sell article on Antonio Gibson. What I think of his range of outcomes, people need to go check that out, dude, because here's the little sneak peek I'm going to give you. I think Antonio Gibson, yes, could he garner more of the pass game usage? But, and you need to go check out the article, because I think there's also a path to Antonio Gibson being a top five running back in fantasy, and he doesn't have to be CMC. He doesn't have to just totally steal all of the passing game work from J.D. McKissic. There's a range of outcomes, man, and it could definitely happen. But moving over to New York, what do you think about Daniel Jones, dude? I mean, I think that, like, they're upgrading a lot of different parts and pieces around him. They brought in Kyle Rudolph, Kadarius Toney, Kenny Galladay. What do you think about him, man? Because we've seen some rushing equity out of Daniel Jones. We've seen some spike weeks. We've seen Daniel Jones perform at an extremely high level. And I know it was, okay, bad defenses, really small sample size, but could he really surprise us this year? Like, could he play extremely well and be good for us in fantasy?
Well, he's undoubtedly the next Josh Allen, so there's I mean, jokes aside, like, whenever somebody asks who the next Josh Allen's going to be, like, who's going to take that next leap, everybody's pretty much saying Daniel Jones. And while I don't think he's going to be Josh Allen level good, like, the choice obviously makes sense. The Giants are doing everything, essentially, that Buffalo did to surround Daniel Jones with talent, right? You bring in Kenny Galladay, you bring in Kadarius Toney, you bring in Kyle Rudolph, you still have Saquon Barkley coming back. The question I have with Daniel Jones, it's a pretty easy one. Can he finally start to navigate the pocket on a consistent basis? Because this Giants offensive line is still bad. Like, they profile as a bottom five unit, probably bottom three right now. Their high draft pick left tackle, Andrew Thomas, was really bad last year. He allowed the second most hurries in the NFL and the second most pressures. He gave up 10 sacks. Like, he's entering his second year. He's young, but that's not the start they want. And then you have Will Hernandez and Shane Lemieux also struggled. They'll get Nate Solder back, which is good. He opted out last year, but is he going to move to right tackle with Andrew Thomas there? Like, there's a lot of question marks with the offensive line. We know Daniel Jones struggles to navigate the pocket and fumbles a lot. But if the pocket's fine and he's got time, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Daniel Jones was actually a very good and accurate deep ball passer last year, and you bring in Kenny Galladay, who you can't find five better deep receivers in the NFL than Kenny Galladay. So that marriage should be really good right out of the gate. Then you
I think it's all going to come down to that offensive line. I think you absolutely crush that, dude. Like, it's going to come down to pressure. That is going to be the end and beginning of Daniel Jones. If they can somehow glue together an offensive line and keep him upright, I think that he's going to play extremely well. If they can't, I think he's going to crumble. And we saw it last year. 12th in clean pocket completion percentage. He dropped to 30th when he was pressured last year.
Yeah, and he was under pressure on 40.3% of his dropbacks. Was the third highest rate in the league. Like, it's a massive, massive number. If that goes down to, like, 25%, which is still, you know, it's not like, high, it's not low. It's kind of, like, I would say manageable. Relatively low. Yeah, yeah, he has enough talent around him, easily. Sterling Shepard. Evan Engram is still a very talented player. Darius Slayton gives you, you know, that was the problem. Like, he threw some catchable balls to Darius Slayton. It's just he doesn't have the adjustment ability and the ability to go up and get it like Kenny Galladay does. And then obviously Saquon Barkley is still, whatever you think of Saquon Barkley coming off the injury, still an absolute elite football player. So a lot of people talked about it after free agency and after the draft. Like, I don't know if you can find five or six offenses with more overall talent than the New York Giants right now. Just, you know, not including offensive line, they're loaded.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And the thing about it is the offensive line is going to make or break this team this year. Because we talked about the splits between clean pocket and pressure and stuff like that. But again, you brought it up about his abilities as a deep ball passer. He's seventh in deep ball completion percentage. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he doesn't have time in the pocket for the wide receivers to get deep for him to throw the damn ball to. Mm-hmm. So it's what's going to be the crux and the linchpin of this team. If the offensive line sucks yet again, Daniel Jones is going to struggle. And all of this entire offense is going to struggle. Saquon Barkley's not going to have holes to run through. The wide receivers are not going to have time to even get through the routes where Daniel Jones is laying on his back. You know, so while I want to buy into Daniel Jones, I have him a little bit lower than some other quarterbacks because of offensive situation. Like, I have Fitzpatrick above him right now because I love the offensive situation in Washington. I think the skill players are immensely good as well, but better offensive line. And I don't have those same kind of questions. So Daniel Jones, while I think the upside could be there, there's a lot of questions I think like that still need to be answered about this offense, and we're not going to know these things until you know, it's week one and it's time to play football, and we're going to find
here's
out.
Here's the other thing.
Can they block?
Here's the other thing, too. Josh Allen had that massive leap last year, was a QB1 in fantasy. As I mentioned earlier, the Bills were an elite offense. They also were an elite passing offense in terms of volume, and they had Brian Daboll. What do you think about Jason Garrett? That's what we also haven't discussed. So, like, Allen, everybody's talking about Daniel Jones making this Josh Allen leap. Daniel Jones is not taking a leap where he's the number one quarterback in fantasy. I think his leap is he finishes as, like, a back-end QB1, like, in that 10, 11, 12 range. And that's still good, especially because he's going to give you rushing. Like, he averaged 4.6 carries and just over 30 rushing yards per game last year. So I'm definitely intrigued by him. But, like, we're both clearly in agreement that the offensive line – people need to be talking about it more, but the direction the Giants are going in terms of what you're supposed to do for your franchise quarterback, I like it because even after adding Galladay and everything in free agency, they were set to draft Devonta Smith until the Eagles got him, and they still drafted Kadarius Toney. So like they are clearly on board with just giving Daniel Jones as much help as possible and seeing if he's the guy or not. And this is probably going to be the year where they find out if he's the guy or not.
I just think they should have done more to the offensive line. I think the biggest two deterrents of Daniel Jones never.
I would have liked to see them take Slater, but they have like it's interesting when you have Solder, Thomas, like who plays where.
My whole thing is that like the offensive line and Jason Garrett, that's what's going to come down to like whether he crashes and burns or he succeeds this year. That's the end and beginning of it, man. Like, but over to different parts or pieces of this offense. What are your expectations for Saquon this year? Like, before the reports started coming out about him being limited walking into the season, I had him ranked, and I think that's still consensus around the industry as a top five running back. I've since gone down a little bit on that because if there are concerns, and we still do have offensive line concerns here, I have a hard time continuing to rank him at least where we're at in the offseason right now. But are you a little bit lower on Saquon? Like, have you dropped with some of those reports, or is he still top three for you?
I mean, it's not that I'm lower on Saquon. I'm just higher on Zeke, you know, and that pushes Saquon down. So, like, I have, like, if you want to take Saquon as the RB3, as the number three pick in the draft, go for it. He's arguably the best running back in the league. He's incredible, incredible, and incredible talent. I just, between coming off the ACL and that report really didn't do much for me because I already had Zeke ahead of him and Kamara ahead of him and Derrick Henry ahead of him. He's my RB5 right now. If Saquon Barkley plays 16, 17 games, whatever, he's going to rival McCaffrey and all these guys because he's an elite talent. He's going to catch 70 passes. He's going to get, you know, 20 touches, 20 carries a game. It's not that I'm lower on Saquon, it's just I'm a little bit higher on guys like Zeke.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, dude. I mean, I think that we think Saquon is going to be an RB1. I don't think that anybody's going to, like, have the gumption to push him outside, you know, top 10, top 12, what have you, and stuff like that. But, like, where the reports are and where his health is, the closer we get to week one, for me, is going to decide where he falls in that entire realm. Because again, I love Ezekiel Elliott. There's a lot of other running backs that I think that are going to garner volume. They're going to be, we don't have those types of health concerns. And some of the guys, it's not even just the health concerns. Like, we're talking about, it's health concerns and it's offensive line concerns. So if you take both of those things and you wrap them together, it's going to fluctuate for me. Like, again, where I have him in my rankings is kind of free-floating depending on what more news we get before week one, man. But before we get done with this and get out of the Giants, what are your thoughts on Kenny Golladay? I think it's fine to view him as a low-end wide receiver two walking into the season. I think it really comes down to what you think about the wide receivers in that range. Like, do you think Cincinnati's good enough to support two guys? Are there other wide receivers that you think can step up and be the guys in their offense? So for me, Kenny Golladay is anywhere from a low end wide receiver to high end three. Even if Daniel Jones is total bleh this year because of the offensive line, I still think Kenny Golladay is going to get his. But where do you see him sitting at walking into the season right now?
Yeah, I have him like in that wide receiver 20 to 22 range. So, like, I would be fine with him as my wide receiver two if I went running back heavy or so in the first couple rounds. And, like, he's not Stephon Diggs, not even close, but if Daniel Jones is going to take the step, you have to assume Kenny Golladay is going to be a relatively large reason why, right? Like, Kadarius Toney, who I love, is not the type of player that's just going to drastically change a quarterback's outlook. And we at this point, we know what Sterling Shepard is. We know what Darius Slayton is. So, I think he's going to step in and immediately be the number one target in this offense, probably get like 115 to 120 targets. Should lead this team in touchdowns, especially if Evan Engram, who I think is going to get moved at least by the deadline. The rest of his team, though, like, I have no interest in Shepard, really. I think he's like a low-ceiling option. Slayton's role is in question now with Toney and Golladay being there. And I will add, Kadarius Toney in season-long in the redraft for this year, not too interested, despite how much I loved him as a prospect and still do love him as a prospect. But don't sleep on him in your rookie draft, because they can easily walk into next year with him as their number two receiver. And he's still young, and he's still talented. And right now it looks crowded. But again, this time next year, Kadarius Toney could be going into the season opposite Kenny Golladay as a wide receiver two in this offense. And if Daniel Jones takes that next step, he becomes even more intriguing. So again, not on Toney other than like a late round flyer and redraft, but he's been falling in rookie-only mocks and rookie drafts. Don't let him fall too much.
Yeah,
because you're not just drafting for this year in rookie drafts.
I think it's fair. If you're willing to bet on the talent and eventually there's some point in the rookie drafts.
You hate. You do not like
him. I'm not a fan of him. I'm not going to try to poo-poo him on the show again. I'm like, we've talked about it, man. We talked about it when Corain was on. We discussed it. I hate his analytical profile. Like, you know, it's bad. I wasn't going to go there, but you pushed me into it. So I get the path and I understand your reasoning for it. So before we get up out of here, Adam, give me a breakout. Give me a bust. Who you got?
So for my breakout, I'm going with it. I don't think he's going to be Josh Allen, but I think Daniel Jones breaks out to some extent this year in fantasy. Okay. Is he going to be an upper echelon NFL starting quarterback? I don't think so. But in fantasy, with his rushing, with the additions they've added to the offense, I will go with Daniel Jones. I could have easily went Jalen Hurts as well. The thing is, like, Dallas, they're off the board. I don't think anybody on their team is going to be a breakout or a bust, really, except for Michael Gallup, who is actually my bust. He ran so many routes last year, and I think if CeeDee Lamb's playing more snaps, those routes come down a little bit. For Gallup, if Lamb starts to push him a little bit down. So I'm going to go with Michael Gallup, who, I guess, like I said, he was like the wide receiver 38 last year. Like, I just don't think there's a huge ceiling with him right now because I think he's the fourth option in this offense.
I don't disagree with on the Gallup call. I think it depends on where his ADP.
And I was going to go Miles Sanders as my bust, but you talked me into it. I think he's perfectly in line. Like, I don't think he's a breakout or a bust.
Yeah, I think he's a higher floor option. I think people are viewing him wrong right now. For my breakout, man, I'm going to lean into this, and I know people are going to sit here and give me some hate about it and say, well, I mean, he was an RB1 earlier in the season. I am in for the Antonio Gibson absolute monster dance party this year, like breaking out, being a top five running back. I'm here for that.
What does a monster dance party look like?
There are strobe lights, there are neon shirts, there are glow sticks. Whether you want to sit here and tie those to a string, swing them around, it's all depends. It just depends on how much space you need and when you're dancing. But it's small snippets. That gives you an idea in your mind's eye of what this dance party looks like, my friend. But again, if I'm not going Antonio Gibson, I would go Jalen Hurts here. I think he's going to have a fantastic year. I think Philly is going to surprise some people just how good and fun this offense is going to be. For my bust, this division is difficult to really peg down a bust, but the guy that I'm going to go with here, because I think people are ranking him as a top 10 tight end, top 12 tight end, and I don't think that he's going to get there. And we didn't discuss him when we brought up Washington, but Logan Thomas, man. Logan Thomas had a ton of volume, ton of routes. I mean, you look at everything. His target share was up there with everybody, but the efficiency was not there. Now with more competition there, you have Antonio Gibson if he garners more of the targets, Terry McLaurin a full season being healthy, Curtis Samuel and Deami Brown. I think Logan Thomas is going to bust. I can't rank him inside my top 12 tight ends. I see a lot of people doing it. A lot of people have him anywhere from 8 to 12. I think that considering that, I don't think he's going to pay off as a tight end one in fantasy this year. But for somebody we didn't discuss when we brought up Washington, am I wrong there? Are you in on Logan Thomas a little bit more than I am for this season?
Yes, but I'm not like incredibly high on him. Like I'd rather have Ferks or I'd rather have Cole Kmet, and it's just like I'd rather have Irv Smith. So like he's not a tight end I'm drafting because I'm getting the guys I want before him or after him, or I'm waiting even longer.
So is he top 12 for you then?
He is currently 11.
Okay.
So,
and I'm not that high on him, man. I think a lot of his numbers
last year. It's
just
tough with tight end, man. Like, we know he has a role. We don't know the exact role for the New England guys and Evan Engram and Zach Ertz. So it just pushes a lot of these other players up. And that's what I'm not like super low on Logan Thomas, but I'm not like incredibly high on him either.
I think I'm lower than consensus because we didn't see the efficiency from him last year. It was volume and hefty amounts of it. With Alex Smith and a hurt Terry McLaurin down the stretch. Because that's when Logan Thomas started balling out, dude. Like, he was okay, but he was middling. And we kept talking about it all the way through the season. We were pulling our hair out with him and DFS. It was like, I played Logan Thomas. So he didn't do anything. I didn't play Logan Thomas. Ah, he's
scored. You want an ideal example of why we always talk about routes matter for tight ends? Just look at Logan Thomas. I'm pretty sure he led all tight ends in routes last year.
He was, at least at some stretch, he's top three. I know that off the top of my head. Top three in routes run. And if you look at that, I'm not saying the routes are coming down, but with the routes and the target share, last year, I mean, it was Terry McLaurin, and who were they throwing to, Adam? Like, it was Steve Sims, Cam Sims. Like, these are the guys you were talking about competing for targets, and as well as with a pop-gun-armed quarterback in Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. I think it's changing, man.
He did lead all tight ends with 609 pass routes run.
It's a ton. And I think he's going to run a lot of routes. My thing about it is that I don't think the targets are going to follow suit this year with all the skill set.
Yeah, and to put that in the perspective, Darren Waller ran 525.
Whew. That's so much, dude. I think it's coming down for Logan Thomas. All right, everyone. That is the NFC East. Again, Adam and I are going to be back later this week discussing more of these divisional previews, and Mike Wright is going to be in the house. We're going to run through a PPR mock draft. You don't want to miss that. It's going to be lit. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.